You're listening to Surrounded by History, a podcast of the Blue Earth County Historical Society, produced by Radio Mankato with your host, Historical Society Executive Director Jessica Potter. And now, Surrounded by History.
Hello and welcome to Surrounded by History. I'm your host, Jessica Potter with the Blue Earth County Historical Society. Joining me today is Radio Mankato's Jeff Lang. Each week, this program explores the history all around us, the history in plain sight. Jeff, to get us started today, I want to read a quote from the Mankato newspaper, The Review, on March 16, 1911, to see if you can figure out where in history we are going today.
All right.
All right, you up for the challenge?
I'm ready.
Okay, here we go. This is a direct quote. It has in every way met the expectations of the contractors and owners and stands as a lasting monument to modern business enterprise, engineering science, and construction method. Its completion has brought about the realization of dreams for many years indulged by people of this vicinity and has placed within our reach what Mankato citizens have long felt was a most essential factor necessary to the future development of our city as a manufacturing center. Cheap power.
Oh. Okay, right up until the last thing there, I thought, okay, it must be something downtown. Maybe the what's now the Ardent Mills building.
Mm-hmm.
But then you said cheap power. So we got to be talking about Rapidan Dam.
We are talking about the Rapidan Dam back in 1911. Today we will explore the history of a local landmark. Let's dive in to be surrounded by the history of the Rapidan Dam. In the spring of 1854, Basil Moreland, a young surveyor on a hunting trip, reached the top of the east bank of the Blue Earth River, 12 miles upstream from the new town site of Mankato.
I'm guessing Moreland Avenue is named after him?
Oh, I think you might be right.
Okay.
The Blue Earth River is a tributary of the Minnesota River, which runs through Blue Earth County, the river's namesake, and through southern Minnesota into Iowa. The river and county was named for former deposits of blue-green clay, no longer visible, along the banks of the river. The river is 108 miles long and joins the Minnesota River. Do you remember what that word was?
Convergence?
Confluence.
Confluence.
At the bend of the river in Mankato, the confluence of the two rivers is near Sibley Park. So we have to kind of put our little geography hat on and think about the Blue Earth River, okay?
Okay.
So back to Moreland, as he viewed the Great Horseshoe Bend, not the confluence bend, but the Great Horseshoe Bend in the river 12 miles upstream from Mankato with its mile long of foaming rapids, he realized that here was a wealth of water power for the taking. He was fully aware that the land was part of the Winnebago Reservation, something we've talked about in a previous podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But nevertheless, he staked his claim and built a good house in the expectation that the area would be opened for settlement. However, the government evicted Moreland, along with any others who had claimed land within the reservation. After the removal of the Winnebago from Blue Earth County in 1863, Moreland then sold his tract of land at a public sale. In 1864, plans for commercial use of the Blue Earth River Rapids for power began to take shape. Silas Kenworthy purchased the property originally held by Moreland, and in partnership with his sons-in-laws, James B. Swan and H.W. Mendenhall, began the construction of a flour mill at the lower rapids. The Kenworthy Mill began operating in December of 1866. Built of a timber frame, 30 by 40 feet, and four stories high, the mill had two runs of four-foot burr stones for grinders. Two additional burr stones were added later. Rapidan Mills became a small village developed along the western banks of the Blue Earth River near these rapids. The village was comprised of homes and small businesses for people working at the mill. Power from the Kenworthy Mill was, like most early water power, a timber and brush dam built about 800 feet above the mill backed up water to a depth of 8 feet. The water was diverted to a mill race with headgates controlling the flow of a vertical turbine water wheel that turns the millstones. By the 1870s, the mill was a thriving enterprise. By 1878, a 230-foot iron bridge set on stone pillings was constructed over the Blue Earth River at Rapidan Mills, connecting trade and commerce for miles around. So it's really blossoming up to the small little community.
I like the name Rapidan Mills, by the way.
Isn't that fun?
It's kind of cute.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, cool, Rapidan Mills.
Yeah, so Rapidan Mills along the Blue Earth River near the rapids. The next decade into the 1880s saw a more efficient and sophisticated use of the Blue Earth River rapids for power. After the death of Kenworthy in 1884, S.H. Baker acquired the mill property and sold it to a corporation. The stockholders were, I want you to listen to these names carefully.
Okay.
Frank Piper, B.E. Baker, E.S. Warner, Cam Piper, Joe Dilley, and S.H. Baker.
I know exactly who these are.
Yeah?
That's the men from Garden City.
There are two of our men from Garden City.
Only two? Oh, I thought three. Oh.
Frank Piper and E.S. Warner were, from a previous podcast we talked about, they were part of the Remarkable Men of Garden City.
Yeah, very cool story.
And so now, here shows you another diversity in their story and the businesses that they got themselves in.
Okay.
So I just kind of geeked out on that. Sorry for the little diversion, but now, now you all have to go listen to the Remarkable Men of Garden City. With money to develop more power, the new company hired the Waddell Company in Mankato to blast a tunnel 800 feet long and 7 feet in diameter through the neck of land that formed the bend in the river to the head of the rapids, diverting the water through the tunnel to horizontal turbine wheels. Okay, I had a 1880s.
We're blowing things up.
Okay, in the way, in doing this, they increased their power supply by receiving the full benefit of the entire 21-foot drop in the rapids. In addition to building the tunnel, the company replaced the old brush and timber dam, which was subject to washouts for obvious reasons, with a Mankato stone dam that was 260 feet long and 8 feet high.
Wow, okay.
Okay, lots of development happening. With the completion of the tunnel and the dam, there apparently was speculation that transmitting surplus power to neighboring towns. Mr. Woodbury, the engineer who superintended the work, estimated that 60% of the power could be transmitted, the balance being lost at the points of connection with the power and the generator. Quote, this is what he stated in the Mankato Review in February 25, 1890. The water power on the Blue Earth River has never been appreciated, but we hope to see public attention directed to them with more interest now that their development has commenced. End quote. The Lake Crystal Mirror newspaper urged the benefits of increased power be secured for Lake Crystal, but the Mankato Review, another newspaper, argued that it was impractical to transmit surplus power to Lake Crystal or Mankato because of the expense and great waste of power. Instead, it was suggested that manufacturing plants should be further developed at the falls. There is no better location in the state for a paper mill. The surrounding country would furnish an abundance of material, and cheap power could be used to a good advantage and profits.
Wow.
End quote. Okay, so we have to remember, at this early in development of this region, this is the kind of the breaking point between the Big Woods and the prairie.
Right.
Okay, so we have a lot of forest, but we have a lot of prairie. So obviously a paper mill was not in the cards for us. Early in 1890, the company enlarged the capacity of the flour mill and built a linseed oil mill, which is what our friends from the Remarkable Men got themselves involved in Mankato.
Right.
So they built a linseed oil mill and elevator adjoining it. Altogether, 25 men were employed. 75 barrels of flour were milled, and 300 bushels of flax crushed per day. Business was flourishing, but success was short-lived.
Yeah.
In the spring of 1891, ice going out of the Blue Earth River damaged the new dam. Some of the stonework was washed out. Reported damage estimates ranged from $1,000 to $7,000. A lot of money at the time. Damage did not interfere with the water power, however, and the mills continued to operate as usual. In January of 1892, the enterprise was dogged with further misfortune. Fire broke out in the linseed oil mill, and 18 barrels of burning oil quickly spread the fire to the flour mill. Most of the equipment was destroyed, along with 20 to 30 bushels of flax, 10 bushels of wheat, 30 tons of bran and shorts, and 20 pounds of linseed oil cake. The mill was reduced to ashes. Only the 400 to 500 barrels of linseed oil in the oil cellars and the expensive new horizontal turbine wheels were undamaged. Except for the operation of the grist mill, power for the Blue Earth River Rapids was not used again commercially until 1899, when the site was purchased by Thomas Rogers, who had operated a number of pioneer mills. He, with his sons, built a large three-story modern flour mill over the old mill foundation and ground out 50 to 75 barrels of flour a day for a number of years. Out of the 60 pounds of wheat the farmers received from 30 to 35 pounds of flour and 10 to 12 pounds of feed, the balance going to the miller for grinding. In addition to their custom milling, wagon loads of their, quote, white rose patent flour, snowflake flour, and Rogers buckwheat flour found their way to stores in southern Minnesota.
That's cool.
Yeah. In 1910, Rogers sold his mill to the Consumers Power Company. The mill was razed. Buildings, homes, and the Iron Bridge and Rapidan mills were torn down or moved, and the surrounding timber cut and moved. Rapidan Mills was no more. But what was to come remains a Blue Earth County landmark.
So this power company just came in and just bought it all up, just like that?
Just like that.
And everybody else was like, all right, go ahead.
Just like that.
All right, I want to hear more. We'll continue more with our story about Rapidan Dam after this.
Welcome back to Surrounded by History. Today, we're talking about the Rapidan Dam. Electricity was already in use in Mankato in 1910, but it wasn't yet king. The Mankato Gas and Electric Company, Electric Light Company's steam-powered generator produced 630 kilowatts of electricity, more than enough to operate the existing commercial and residential lighting systems and a couple dozen municipal street lamps. Gasoline engines still perform much of the light industrial work around town. But technology and capitalism were on the march, ready to work the same transformations in the promising Minnesota prairies that they had back east. No one appeared alarmed when the Free Press announced on February 24, 1910, that the local power company had been sold to a corporation of Chicago capitalists, which already owned electrical generating plants in Stillwater, Red Wing, and Faribault, under the name of the Consumers Power Company.
So a group out of Chicago. So they're already, expected, I guess it's 1900s already. Mm-hmm. But they already got these groups, these conglomerate groups coming in, buying stuff. And anyway, come on.
Yeah, it's part of history.
I get it.
At the same time, the company was completing the purchase of land along the Blue Earth River near Rapidan Mills for the site of a major power-generating dam. The surveying of the reservoir site had been going on for a year with the help of the county surveyor. The land purchases in the area might have begun as early as 1907. Land purchases and promises of jobs for 200 men made the project very enticing. Construction got underway almost immediately by the Amberson Company, an established dam builder.
They're damn good, too.
I knew that. How many are we going to have? Should we count them?
I'll start counting.
Okay. The old flour mill buildings at the dam site were moved to the top of the West Bluff and converted into bunkhouses and dining halls. A classified ad in the Free Press called for 150 men and 35 teams, that would be teams of horses, to work on the project. The men were promised the highest scale of wages, and the team were to be hired for 40 cents per hour to haul sand and gravel. 88 men reported to work on March 17th, 1910, And about 25 of them were fired the next day when they were fighting for higher wages. The winter was rather mild, and the work progressed without a hitch. The poured concrete dam and powerhouse are founded on friable sandstone bedrock in a steep U-shaped valley. The overall length of the dam is approximately 475 feet, and the maximum height is approximately 90 feet. The reservoir upstream of the dam, which was formerly the location of that village of Rapidan Hills, provides storage for storage of water for power generation, recreation, and conservation value. The dam and powerhouse were completed by the spring of 1911, and their electricity from the dam's two 750 kilowatt General Electric generators flowed into Mankato on March 11th, 1911.
It only took a year.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Isn't that incredible?
Like, even now, that's surprising if it took a year.
I know. The output of the turbines at the dam more than doubled Mankato's steam-powered plant capacity. However, there was no big celebration. No ceremony switch-throwing when the power first made its way along the line to the substation at Elm Street, which I think is very interesting.
Right. You have a big party for that.
Uh-huh. If you would like to learn more about the construction, the day-to-day construction about the dam, because we kind of skimmed over that a little bit, the Blue Earth County Historical Society has put together a book called Rapidan Dam, The Construction of a Landmark. It contains photographs and articles from two Mankato newspapers, The Review and the Mankato Free Press, that chronicled the dam's construction from the initial community rumblings in February 1910 to the final walkthrough with the Consumers Power Company engineers in March of 1911.
I've seen that book.
The photographs are incredible.
I don't think there's enough damn photographs.
I'm sure there's a few. All right, back to 1911.
All right.
At this time, electricity was only used for lighting and not in every home. So the power company was soon stringing lines to sell the power from Rapidan Dam throughout the area. In 1912, lines were strung to Lake Crystal and Kasota. 1913, a line was completed all the way to Faribault.
Oh, wow.
And by 1915, 12 additional area communities benefited from the Rapidan Dam power. And did you know that in 1916, Consumers Power Company became Northern States Power Company, or NSP, and it remained NSP until 2000.
Oh, wow.
When it became Xcel Energy.
That's incredible.
A little
bit.
That's
quite the timeline there
for
them.
Yeah,
I also find it interesting that the Rapidan Dam was putting out that much energy.
Uh-huh.
I knew they would put out some, but that much to be able to go all the way to Faribault and stuff.
I know. It is pretty crazy. So as you can imagine, because electricity was kind of rare at this time, that not as many people were using it, what they were output was probably more than sufficient.
Okay.
But then as more people started using electricity,
it did go down in its
value, if you want to call it. The dam gradually became obsolete. The huge growth in the use of electricity after World War I and the coming of the Rural Electrification Act in the 1930s soon outstripped the 1,500 kilowatts capacity at the Rapidan Dam. Mm-hmm. When the Wilmarth Generating Plant was opened on the north edge of Mankato in 1948, it had a capacity of 25,000 kilowatts.
Wow.
Which is tiny in comparison to today's electrical plants and grids.
So many.
Right. But we could only put out 1,500, and then all of a sudden you've got 25,000, and now it's like millions.
Right.
You know, so the hydroelectric plant at Rapidan delivered power to Mankato until the spring flood of 1965. We've talked about this in a previous podcast.
Yeah.
When the reservoir with its thick sheets of ice rose 4 inches in one night to reach a height of 6 inches above the floodgate clearance, it hit with the full force of the ice and a phenomenal peak discharge of 43,000 cubic feet of water per second, That's almost twice of what the 1951 flood record was, 26,000 cubic feet per second. The gates were torn out, leaving only one badly damaged gate still attached. The powerhouse was flooded, the generators had to be shut off, and the hydroelectric plant eventually became inoperative. In 1970, Blue Earth County obtained ownership of the dam and 750 acres of land from the Northern States Power Company. And it was meant to be kept as an environmental corridor of wildlife habitats, recreation areas, and nature trails. In 1980, after the Windfall Tax Act and the Public Utilities Regulatory Policies Act of 1978 were both passed, the hydroelectric market was revived. And Rabidan Dam was one of the first hydroelectric facilities to be renovated with public and private sector cooperation. The dam once again began producing hydroelectric power in 1984.
There you go.
Yeah. In 2002, extensive undermining of the dam's foundation was discovered, and emergency repairs were required to prevent a dam failure. I know, I knew you'd giggle. I knew you'd giggle. Additional apron foundation and abutment repairs have been conducted since 2002. The Rapidan Power Station produces approximately 23 million kilowatt hours of clean energy in a typical year. Eagle Creek Renewable Energy owns the turbines, the generators, electrical equipment, and operates the dam under a lease with, in a lease agreement with Blue Earth County.
They're on a dam lease.
They're on a dam lease. Today, concerns about the future of the dam continue. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission has classified the Rapidan Dam as having a significant downstream hazard potential based on the environmental damage that would be caused not by a flood of water if the dam failed, but by an uncontrolled release of the agricultural impacted sediments behind the dam. The Minnesota DNR estimates 11 million cubic yards of sediment in the reservoir behind the dam. So as a point of reference, in 1950, the deepest point of water in the reservoir was just 12 feet.
Okay.
It's an almost 90-foot wall.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So just imagine what the sediment level is today. If that was 1950.
Wow, you're right.
Okay? So that's the biggest concern. So we're going to switch gears a little bit because you can't think of the Rapidan Dam without thinking of...
The dam store.
Exactly. The dam store has become a staple in Blue Earth County. But did you know that that little store and cafe actually dates back to 1910?
Wow. I mean, that was all the way back to 1910. That's incredible.
The building, which originally stood in the village of Rapidan Mills, was moved to its current location and opened as a store in 1910 by George Nelson. Nelson saw a business opportunity. He catered to the men who worked on the construction of the dam, and he picked up business from those who traveled to the Blue Earth River to fish from its waters. Several people have operated the store between Nelson, who operated it up until 1937, and the current owners, who are Jenny Barnes and David Haruska. Their parents, Jim and Linda, purchased, their brother and sister, their parents purchased the store and the dam keeper's house from the Sween family in 1972. The Sweens also owned the land behind the dam store and continued to operate that as a campground until 2003. In 1972, Jim's mother, Jen, wanted her son nearer home, and Jim wanted to be nearer the Blue Earth River where he grew up because he loved to fish. Jen promised to show them how to make her specialty hamburgers.
Ooh.
From working at the Old Junction Inn and the Hilltop Tavern to restaurants known for their hamburgers, Jen had the experience the young couple needed. But the cafe needed a lot of work. The Haruskas quickly added indoor plumbing, restrooms, a septic system that eliminated two outhouses. A bedroom was renovated into the current kitchen, and the dish sink was removed from the dining area. The Haruskas promptly moved the bait outside and made other repairs as well. And of course, the dam store is best known for...
the dam pie!
That's right. The tradition began in 1985 when Rapidan resident Erna Lang began making the pies for the cafe. She continued this tradition and her secret recipes until 2002. At that time, she passed the wooden rolling pin to Jim's daughter, Jenny. Today, Jenny makes all of the pies still fresh every day and dependent upon what fruit is in season. The Dam store is open April through October.
Awesome.
We hope you enjoyed today's program as we explored the history of the Rapidan Dam, which stands as a local landmark and continues to marvel visitors a century later. We encourage you to be a tourist in your own backyard. Visit the Rapidan Dam, a local landmark. Stop by the Dam store for a hamburger and, of course, a piece of Jenny's pie. Oh, and a little word of advice, take some old school paper money with you when you go. All of the information we share today comes from the archives of the Blue Earth County Historical Society. Until next time, we hope you see the history that surrounds you.
You've been listening to Surrounded by History, a podcast from the Blue Earth County Historical Society, produced by Radio Mankato. For more information on this and other topics, visit BlueEarthCountyHistory.com or stop by the Blue Earth County History Center at 424 Warren Street in Mankato. Thanks for listening to Surrounded by History.